Frank Ntilikina. Frank Ntilikina, listeners, is showing his value as being a top 10 pick in the NBA draft. Got to give Mad Mike props because Mad Mike has been telling us from jump that Frank Ntilikina is a solid basketball player. And the hot caca bowl was played today between both New York football teams. And why do I say hot caca? That's because the New York Giants and the New York Jets both are duty. And let's talk about Julius Randle, the $63 million man who is playing out of control basketball, listeners. I hate to sound like a broken record. I hope you Knicks fans and basketball fans have been watching the Knicks play so you can see exactly what in the hell I'm talking about. It's becoming painful to watch this dude when he touches the ball. And why is he even still on the court when he does touch the ball, doesn't play, and within the system that the rest of his teammates are playing in? Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please, pardon my French, as we bring you all new episodes of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, November 11th, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And listeners, please tell your family, friends, and loved ones to check out the show. Start spreading that news that I always ask for you guys to do. We're also on social media, listeners. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. L-L-O-Y-D for those that need the spelling because my name is always butchered. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this air, you can shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com. You can send them directly to the website, or you can send them through social media, listeners. Great show for you today, as always. We're going to talk some New York Knicks. Frank Ntilikina is playing some solid basketball. Mad Mike has been telling us this from the jump. We're going to give him his props and talk about Frank Ntilikina. Also, we're going to talk about Julius Randle, who continues to play out of control damn basketball. What a waste of $63 million thus far, listeners. We're going to talk some football as the hot caca bowl was played yesterday between both New York football teams. We're going to touch up on that and maybe some other things as well. So it's always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from, listeners. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm in a New York state of mind. You know, I couldn't go nowhere with the god-awful Jets playing the god-awfuler Giants this past weekend. It's exactly where else are we supposed to be but New York?
Listen, man, Mike, during the intro, I called it the hot caca bowl. And the reason why I called it the hot caca bowl was because it was against two football teams that are duty. But before we talk some Frank Ntilikina, Mad Mike, and give you your props, myself and hopefully the listeners, because you called it, he's balling out. You called it. We're going to touch on that. But before we do that, let's talk about this ugly football game that was played in New York over the weekend. And the Jets are worse than the tanking Dolphins, but better than the supposedly urgent Giants. Chew on that idea, listeners. Chew on that idea. The NFL has revealed this over the last 2 weeks. So let's cue this 5-on-5 for Pat Shermer and the Giants and sigh of relief, possibly for Adam Gates and the Jets, all right? Who were in conversation for the worst NFL team after duds the last few weeks. The Giants responded Sunday, hey, just hold my football. Hold it for me. Hold the damn football. Daniel Jones could, some may say he outplayed Sam Darnold, listeners, in a box score, but the Jets won 34-27.
And they I got something for that, Lloyd. Okay. I got something for those folks, too, by the way.
All right, we'll and with their snare home at MetLife Stadium, was more about which team was more inept, in my opinion. I knew I wasn't going to see solid football. And the Giants had the worst defense, the worst offensive line, the worst coaching adjustments on the way to the sixth straight loss. And things got so bad for my football team, listeners. They had to punt with less than 3 minutes remaining and no timeouts remaining because it was 4th and 19 from their own 3-yard line. This is sad. I mean, they allowed 6 sacks. 6. Saquon Barkley carried 13 times for just 1 yard. Le'Veon Bell looked like a hero by comparison.
You know what bothered me? You know what bothered me about that, Lloyd? Coming out afterwards and acting like he was hurt. Like, he got hurt in-game. But coming in, if he's hurting to the point where he's only got 1 yard, why is he playing?
Yeah, absolutely made no sense. Listen, even if he wasn't hurt, listeners,
that sound like excuses.
I still wouldn't have had him in a game.
And I want to tell you one other thing about that for a second. The New York Jets going into that game had the 6th-ranked run defense in football. Number 1-ranked defense in yards per carry. So, I know he's a special guy, but, you know, I think Shermer did himself a disservice. I think he did the Jets a disservice by kind of like, oh, he's hurt. Well, that's a good run defense. They might not have a secondary
at all. And they're not for nothing. Nate Solder went out with a concussion. Mike Grimm is back. So they had 2 substitute tackles on each end. And Will Hernandez and Zeitler, you know, they were the only starters. And even Jalapio was out too. So 3 of the 5 offensive linemen, starting offensive linemen, were out. And just think about this, listeners and Mad Mike. This offensive line on paper is a better offensive line. But the line that was in front of Saquon Barkley last year, he had more rushing yards. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. You know what I'm saying? The lead changed hands twice in the second half. The Jets squandering a 21-13 lead by allowing 14 consecutive points. And the Giants blowing a 27-21 lead by giving up the next 13 on 3 straight series. Jones did throw for 294 yards. And for the second time in 8 career starts, he threw 4 touchdowns. The first 2 to Darius Slayton, the next 2 to Golden Tate. And I'm seeing offense. I know where you're going with this, and I think I know where you're going with this. This offense is predicated on 10 to 15 yard passes. Passing
yaks. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. He had 290 yards, but how many yards is it the?
Listeners, we're getting some technical difficulties with Mad Mike. So until he get him back, I'm gonna keep on running my.
Yo.
All right, we got you. Go ahead.
I was going to say that, like that Golden Tate 60-yard touchdown pass, that was a screen pass 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That wasn't Daniel Jones dropping dimes. That was Golden Tate running through blocks and the Jets just doing a poor job of tackling.
How many
times do we got to keep seeing this?
The Darius Slayton slant. That was a 5-yard slant that he turned into a touchdown.
Correct, and that's my point. And everyone just keeps calling them dimes. When we saw it, I think he started the game off 9 of 11 for 100. I think it was 104. And I'm like, damn. But then I look at it, and like you said, it's like, it's all yak. It's all the receivers doing it. So look what happened later in the game when they had to run deeper routes, like you just mentioned, that last drive where they were forced to punt. When they had to run deeper routes, he overthrew a guy on the sidelines. He's getting sacked. It's not like they had a batted ball out. Bless Austin had a batted ball on a pass to Golden Tate. To me personally, it's like, all right, guys, show us that he can run the 10, 15 yard, throw the ball 10, 15 in the air. You know, let's see if we're going to start naming them that. Let's start seeing it. I mean, anyone can throw a 5 yard pass. You kind of wonder why the Jets stopped throwing 5 yard passes. Yeah,
he still has issues with ball security, too, listeners. Jamal Adams just completely owned Saquon Barkley the entire day. The entire day, he just kind of bold rushed or bum rushed him, went right through his block, took the ball right out of Daniel Jones' hand, and scored a touchdown. This was an ugly football game. It was ugly. Ugly football game.
By the way, that fumble was the difference in the game. I know nobody wants to talk about it, but that fumble was the difference in the game, was it not? Did they not lose by 7?
No, you're right. And let's talk about there was a botched PAT by the Giants because of a bad snap. Aldrick Rojas missed the extra point. Oh, this is an ugly football game, listeners. Ugly. And like I said, the Giants played most of the game without 3 injured offensive line starters. Nick Gates made his first NFL start. Eric Smith made his. Who the hell are those guys?
Well, for the record, the Jets actually, Jonathan Harrison has started. What a mistake that looks like, Ryan Khalil, by the way. Jonathan Harrison goes in there and they don't even miss a beat at center. Makes you wonder if that $8 million that they spent on Khalil should have been spent on a cornerback. But they lose Brian Witcher's mid-game and Tom Compton has to come in. And, you know, the Jets were playing with a busted-up offensive line, too. But here's the difference between Shermer and Gates. I feel like as overmatched as I think Shermer is, and you know that I do, you know that I don't really think he's a good coach, but, you know, he made the adjustments in this game. And you saw it, you know, mid that said the Jets were running away with this early on. It looked like it was going to be a laugher. 14-0, if the flea flicker works, it's 21-0. And this game is over, like, in the first quarter. But, you know, Gase, for some reason, starts running, you know, stops calling short, you know, intermediate routes and the quick outs, quick hits. And he starts going to these deeper routes. And this team doesn't have that. The quarterback doesn't have that kind of time. And two, outside of Robbie Anderson, who's capable of running these kind of routes? And you just saw the offense stall for 2 quarters right there in the middle of the game. And it's funny because it stalled against the Cowboys after the same kind of start. It stalled against the Miami Dolphins after the same kind of start. And it stalled yesterday after the same kind of start. So it tells me that as overmatched as I think Shermer is, I think Gase is even more overmatched. I don't think Gase knows how to adjust his game plan. I don't think he knows. And I think after years in Miami, we're seeing it. Everything has to go the way he thinks it's going to go. Otherwise, he can't coach himself through a game.
And the thing I'm also noticing as I watch these teams week in and week out, man, Mike, the Giants are a mess. It's not like the Jets are any better, but we know where the Jets issues lie in. You know, Adam Gase. But with the Giants, you got Shermer. You got Betcha, and you have the GM. And they all seem to coincide with each other. And I really can't see the GM firing Shermer at the end. He should be fired at the end of the season, and so should James Betcha. I've said it more than once, listeners. There's some offensive coaches, they're not good head coaches. They're just not.
The San Francisco Giants hired a new GM yesterday, and I swear to you, when I was talking about the baseball Giants, when I saw the banner come across, Giants hire a new GM, I was like, it was in the middle of the Jets-Giants game, and I'm like, holy crap, they just fired this guy. Like, I can't believe they just did it. They see this game against the Jets, and they're saying, I've seen all I need to see.
Yeah.
But I was wrong.
It's amazing, man. It's amazing. This organization is going nowhere fast. And then with the Giants being in the state that they're in, listeners, the GM trades away a third and fifth round pick for a defensive tackle.
Let's talk about it, man, because we didn't talk about that last week. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about that, because yesterday's game, to me, is a microcosm of Leonard Williams' career as a Jet. It's always some kind of pressure. It's always disruption, but it's never the game-changing play. It's never the sack. For example, when you have a franchise defensive player, I consider Jamal Adams. I don't care what the Jets do. It's just like I said with the Dolphins. You get a first-round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick. There's no way you replace Minkah Fitzpatrick. There's only one Minkah Fitzpatrick per draft. You know what I mean? There's only one Jamal Adams per draft. And if you're going to trade him for a first and a third round pick next year, guess what? You're going to have to use one of those picks on a safety. If it's not a first rounder, then you're not getting a safety as good as Jamal Adams. And look what he did. Special player. Bull rush. Bum rush.
Yeah, that's what Rondae Barber was saying during the game. Yeah, Rondae Barber was saying the same exact thing.
Think about what he did. He changed. They won by 7, and that was a play. He changed the game. He won the game. You can say he won the game. He bum rushed Saquon Barkley. He stripped and pushed. He took the ball with one arm and pushed Daniel Jones to the ground with the other and ran in for a touchdown. That's special players. Leonard Williams, Lloyd, he's not that. And I don't understand why the Giants would give up a third and a fifth. By the way, that fifth, because they keep saying a third and a fifth. Well, if you traded the third rounder this coming year for him, you're going to re-sign him, right? That's got to be the intention, to re-sign him. You didn't, in a losing year where you're 2-8, 2-7, whatever the hell you are, you didn't give up a third rounder for nothing. But if they re-sign him, it turns into a fourth round pick.
Listen, he was going to be a free agent anyway. Why? He was going to be a free agent anyway, and if it was somebody you had on your radar, why in the hell are you trading a third round pick for somebody you can just simply sign as a free agent during the offseason?
Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. And you're going to laugh at this. And the reason I think you're going to laugh at this is because I don't think the Giants right now are in any better of a place. But because there's reports saying, one, that Oakland really, really wants him. And there's other reports saying that he wants to go home. He wants to go back home to L.A. Now, you got to think about it. Chargers, Melvin Ingram's getting a little up there. Joey Bosa's young. That can open things up for him. If he goes, I know Oakland's out of here. They're going to Vegas, but you have some other teams out there. The Rams, they're looking for defensive line help, interior line help to open up things for Aaron Donald. Anyway, what I'm basically saying is he's tired of New York. He sees how this media is. They turn on their teams quick. So if you got a guy that you think you're going to target in free agency, but you also think that there's a chance that he just wants to leave this city, you trade for him now. And you trade for him now and try to convince him that, hey, look, that's a clown organization, and we're the big brother. We're who you look up to. How it's really done.
That's a great point, Matt Mike. But here's the thing, and I want to run by you. Okay, if he's looking to leave, and the Giants are trying to convince him to stay, how in the hell are they convincing him to stay by running the same defense that he didn't want to be in to begin with?
Well, that's my point. See, now that's why I don't think that this made any sense. Because to me personally, I'm looking at them and I'm saying, you've actually been a bigger joke than the New York Jets over the last 3 years, if you think about it. Because even this year, they weren't rebuilding this year. There was no talk of rebuilding this year. The Giants actually went and spent some money. They wanted you to think they were going to be an even better team this year, that they can compete. That's why you go and you get a guy like Saquon Barkley 2 years ago. So the Jets, on the other hand, you knew the Jets weren't competing. You knew the Jets were rebuilding. So if you're Leonard Williams and you're saying, if this is what you call competing, I'm getting the hell out of here.
No, you're right. I really, listen, they hosed the Giants on this one. They hosed them.
And not only that, but like I said, no sacks for him. It's the same deal. I mean, you didn't have to trade for him to see any of that. You know what I mean? In my opinion, you didn't have to trade.
You know,
just put on the tape,
dude. I think he's a solid football player. Listeners, I just think he's playing out of position. He's not a defensive end.
And yeah, but you want to know what? He doesn't want to play interior. He wants to play end on the left side. I'm telling you.
Yeah, he's
That's what he wants. I'm telling you. Like, the Jets have been going through this for years. And for years, I've defended him and said, well, if you got him an outside pass rusher, but you like everyone else said.
But what coaching staff do you have in place to change that? I mean, if this team is putrid as far as they're putrid. He's not a Von Miller. He's not a game changer. The Giants could have went after so many people as far as if you're going to trade away draft picks. But Leonard Williams, now you're going to lose a third-round pick. And what does it go? If he signs, they lose a fourth-round pick. If he leaves, they just lose a fifth-round pick. It was such
correct.
A stupid.
So they traded a third-rounder. Yeah, they traded a third-rounder in 2020. So next year's draft, the third-rounder. And then in the following draft, 2021, the Jets get a fifth-rounder. But if he re-signs with the Giants, that fifth-rounder will turn into a fourth-round pick. Now, if you're the Giants and you have $100 million in cap space to spend next year, which they do, you're thinking two things, right? And this is why I say this is dumb. This is dumb because if you're trying to convince Leonard Williams to stay, he just saw the same exact plan that you have blow up in the Jets' face this year, where they had the $100 million. They were careless with their draft pick because they thought that they could just fill holes with money. All good. You know what I mean? But if you're the Giants, that's what you're thinking. You're thinking, all right, well, if I give Leonard Williams $18 million to stay, I still have another $80 million to fill holes. I can afford to lose a third-round pick. But if you suck, and then they're thinking that next year they're going to be good, so that fourth-round pick is not going to be a high pick in a fourth round.
No, it makes
me,
sense.
I think they're going to suck. I'm with you.
Well, let's move on 100%. To these grades. Man, Mike, let's start off with the Jets. I thought Sam Darnold got off to another hot start. He was 7 for 7 on a Jets opening drive, and he capped that with a 2-yard TD run. And he finished the day 19-30, one passing TD, one TD on the ground, no interceptions. He was 12 of 23. All right, the running back, same old story, no piss from the O-line. You know, but given anything more than deep, oh my gosh, his offensive line. Well, I mean, Le'Veon Bell did run for 34 yards, I believe. You know, Jamarius Thomas, Jamison Crowder combined for 11 receptions and 165 yards. Robbie Anderson had a quiet day, but he did draw big pass interference in the end zone and not much production from the tight ends. He only had one catch. Offensive line, no push. I'm giving these guys a C, C minus.
I honestly, I gave them a B only because I thought when I'm watching this game, Lloyd, I'm being honest with you. I'm watching this game and I'm just thinking that this coaching staff is just doing them such a disservice. They're not adjusting. The game plan for some reason went from short, quick hits to, like I said, deep downfield looks on an O-line that has shown you all year that they can't hold up. Robbie landed the really good pass interference, but there was a play on third down there where Sam is over here, you know, he steps up in the pocket, shakes the ghost, and delivers a strike to Robbie Anderson on the sideline, and Robbie takes the hit from Janoris Jenkins, and he can't, this guy still has weak hands. His hands are just not strong enough to be a number one receiver in this league. To be a number one receiver in this league, you got to be able to make these tough, contested catches. And for some reason, whenever it's a 50-50 ball, he doesn't win them. So, you know, I had to downgrade the offense for plays like that. You know, I'll get more into the offense when we do the coaching staff grades. But I gave them a B because I thought that this, for the most part, they did extremely well with the opportunities they were given.
All right, now let's move on to the defense. I thought, listen, when you hold Saquon Barkley to 1 yard rushing and win a football game, you got to get a good grade for that. I thought the linebackers did a good job. They slowed down Barkley, also picked up 2.5 sacks. Jordan Jenkins getting a pair, and James Burris sharing a sack with Steve McClendon. Safeties, Jamal Adams, enough said with his play on the field. You know, the cornerbacks, again, rookie Blake Austin made his NFL debut, picked up a pass, you know, a couple of pass defended plays and had what looked to be a forced fumble, you know, in the game's closing moments, but the pass was ruled incomplete by officials. You know, I'm going to give the defense a B+, man, Mike, even though they did give up points. Even though they did give up that many points, I'm still going to give – I mean, you know what? Matter of fact, I'm going to move that down to a B. I'm going to give the defense a B.
Yeah,
when they gave up that many points, I would have gave them a higher score, but they gave up a bunch of points.
Yeah, I gave the defense a B as well, simply because we're talking about the Jets are now playing with practice squad cornerbacks, and while they're not necessarily playing with practice squad linebackers, they are playing with like their fifth. I mean, Brandon Copeland's playing middle linebacker. And Brandon Copeland's an outside linebacker. That just goes to show you how decimated they are by injuries at the position. But there were certain things that I didn't like, even as well as I thought that they played. There was a third and 14 there in the middle of the second half where Daniel Jones actually runs for a first down. And he shouldn't have got a first down. He only gets the first down because the same guy that you just mentioned, James Burgess, for some reason is not wrapping up. You're a linebacker taking on a quarterback, and instead of wrapping him up, you're trying to lay the big hit. You're laying the wood, you know what I mean? And Daniel Jones just took the hit and kept motoring on for an extra 3-4 yards and lands the first down. Can't have those plays. You know, Blake Cashman might have been small. He might have, you know, I always thought he was going to end up being an injury risk. But the one thing you can't say about Blake Cashman is he was technically sound. He always wrapped up. You weren't going to beat him by bad tackling. So, yeah, I gave him a B. I thought the effort was there. We haven't seen this line look as good as they did. You know, obviously, Giants O-line had a lot to play in that. But Nathan Shepard looked a lot better than You know, Nathan Shepard is the reason why you can trade Leonard Williams. So, yeah, I gave him a B.
All right, now special teams. Sam Ficken kicked a career-long 53-yard field goal, but he missed from 54. He finished the day 2-3 on field goals. And the Jets coverage team shut down the Giants' return game. And Locke Edwards dropped a couple of punts inside the 20 and averaged a 45.6 yard per punt. So, I'm going to give them a B+. Plus, it would have been higher than that if it wasn't for, you know, the 54-yard missed field goal, which is, I mean, it's not an easy kick. But nowadays, you know, kickers are making that with ease. Incredibly, you know, it's incredible that that's the case. But I'm going to give the special teams a B+, plus, man, Mike.
Yeah, you know, I gave them a B+, plus, a shade under the A. And it's funny you mention that because the same reason that you didn't give them an A is the same reason I didn't give them the A. And slightly more. Simply put, I think that our kicker, I think they said on the season he's 1-for-5 kicking from 50 yards or 2-for-5 kicking from 50. In a day and age where everybody's kicking for 50, you can't be giving away points on the scoreboard on 50-yard field goals. He's got to figure it out. He's got to either get strength in the leg or figure out his accuracy. I'm with you there. The other reason being, and I put this more on the coach, because we saw Greg Dortch in the preseason. He was electric on punt returns. And for some reason, Adam Gase has a hard-on for Braxton Berrios from Berrios' time in Miami. When he not in Miami Dolphins, Miami Hurricanes, and Gase had the inside scoop on him. This guy doesn't return the ball, man. He's averaging like 6 yards of return on punts, and that's just not good enough in this league. And he did it again. Everything is safe. I have a problem with it. And I keep knocking them for that because you got to be able to return. You know, there's got to be some kind of threat. And you know this from the Giants. The Giants have, you know, there's always a threat with Slayton and some other guy that you could plug back there. And they just don't have that.
No, you're right. You're right. And now let's move on to coaching. All right. Like you said, for whatever reason, Adam Gase has a hard time adjusting to things during games. He's terrible at that. Terrible at it. You know, and again, you know, even though the Jets gave up that many points, Matt Mike on the defensive side of the ball, Greg Williams continues to do a hell of a job. He continues to do a hell of a job. For him to get that type of production from nothing, when you know what I'm saying, in certain positions, you got to tip your cap to somebody like that. So with that being said, because of Greg Williams, I'm going to give them a B-.
I gave the coaches a D plus. I gave the coaching a D plus, and I'm gonna tell you why. Besides the fact that I do agree with you, I think Greg Williams got to get, you know, for the most part, you got to give him an A, maybe a B plus. But here's one thing that actually got caught on a couple bad times. Every time Saquon went into motion as a receiver, Daniel Jones may have missed him or whatever it is, but he's wide open. The Jets still haven't figured out how to defend the wheel routes when they have their linebackers or defensive linemen covering the running back or whatever it is. Two, another reason that I did have a big problem, we already spoke about the adjustments on offense, which I think is a problem. But, you know, there was 11-second stretch where Adam Gase challenged two plays. One, he challenges a third down run up the middle, bottom of a ball, challenging fourth and one was a first down. It made no sense because at the time, the Giants had no timeouts and the Jets had all three and the Jets were up by seven. So follow me here. If you have to punt the ball here and they score the tying touchdown, you have all three timeouts plus a 2-minute warning. Why would you give a timeout back by challenging a play that it wasn't clear to begin with? Rondae Barber even said it. Like, you can't see where the ball is here. And not only that, but you don't know when forward progress was whistled dead compared to where the spot was on the video replay. It's a dumb, he said it then. He just said it's a dumb challenge play. And then they challenged the fumble on the forward pass. All in 11 seconds. And not only that, but you're challenging that Daniel Jones fumbled the ball. Why is your offensive coordinator the one in your ear to throw in a challenge flag? And why is he the one telling the referee, That's a fumble. Why is Greg Williams not in your ear? Not only that, why are you not next to Greg Williams when your team's on defense? Why are you not with your defensive coordinator? You know why? Because he's not really ready to be a head coach. Because all he cares about is the offensive side of the ball. And Darryl Loggins is just a yes man. That's why there's no adjustments. That's why I did what I did and gave this team a D plus. Because of things like that. Those things go overlooked because the Jets won. Imagine the Giants came back.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. But before we go to a commercial break, listeners and Mad Mike, let's give the New York Giants their grade. And let's start with the offense. And amid the slop, because it was a lot of slop, some may say that Daniel Jones stood tall. Obviously, a lot of his passes within a 10-15-yard range. All right? He did not throw interception, though. He made a couple of stupid reads. Bad passes, but he got lucky, all right? Surrendered that strip sack for Jets points. But, I mean, he was operating without any semblance of a ground game. And listen, man, Mike, I keep on saying this all the time. There is no way on God Green's earth that Saquon Barkley should ever get the ball 13 times and finish with 1 yard. One! And his pass protection is regressing. I'm a big Saquon Barkley fan. I said on last week's show that I would have took Saquon Barkley over Sam Darnold 10 out of 10 times, and I still feel that way. But sometimes you have to call a spade a spade. It's regressing big time. The line, the injury-riddled shuttle line, six sacks, no blocking worth anything. Darius Slayton didn't have 10 catches for 121 yards and two touchdowns, and he seems to be playing really solid football. Golden Tate also had two touchdowns. I'm giving this offense a C-minus, man, Mike.
Before I give my grade, I got to ask you a question. Did Evan Engram play?
No, he had a foot injury.
And that's why Rhett Ellison was a starter, right?
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Yes.
So, yeah, I gave them a D. The reason I was asking is because I was about to bump it down to F, but gave it down to a D.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I looked at it, and like I said before, Darius Slayton was a great. He was an amazing bright spot, but it was clear that he was game planned. He was put into the game plan. That was a weakness they saw in the Jet defense that they thought they can exploit, which they did. The only reason that I'm not going to give too much credit to Golden Tate is simply because he wasn't as much a part of the game plan as they'd like you to believe, because if you take out the 60, 55-yard touchdown pass, he only had 40 yards the rest of the game, 37-some-odd yards if you took out the touchdown. So how good was he really if you take out the, you know, busted play? So I wasn't too blown away by that. But once again, like you said, six sacks, bro. I mean, what are you doing? Six sacks to a Jets team that hasn't gotten sack production at all this season. It was a weird game, but you know, 13 carries, 1 yard to Saquon, but he had 30 yards receiving. So if you know that you're not getting the push up front, then maybe you stop, you know, maybe you disagree with me, but maybe I'm not looking to run with Saquon. Maybe that's the kind of game where now Saquon to me is going to turn into a receiver.
Yeah, it was
awful, show more trust in the game,
man. Pat Shurmur calls the offensive plays. Listen, it's bad job. It is your job as an offensive mastermind to put your players in the best position to be successful.
Bro, I'm telling you right now, and I've said it, and I'm going to say it about them too. You know what? I'll wait till we go to coaching. I'm not going to pick on them right now. I'll wait till we get the coaching part of it.
All right, so now let's move on to the defense. And where do I start? With the defense, I'll start off with something nice, okay, listeners? Le'Veon Bell had 18 rushes for 34 yards and a touchdown and was held in check, but he could have been held in check because the offensive line is not good, all right? And that's it for the niceness for me. Giving up 24 points to the Jets offense is way too many. Terrible start, putting the team in a 14-0 hole. You know what I'm saying? Making this a get-right game for Sam Darnold, Jets offense.
Hey, I want to correct you. They gave up 27 points to the New York Jets offense.
No. I'm saying they okay. Right. You're right. All right.
I'm not going to cheat, my boys.
The Jets offensive line is a mess, and yet only two sacks. You know, the Giants only got two sacks, which is really bad. DeAndre Baker continues to struggle. 33-yard pass interference penalty. Handing the Jets a touchdown and asking these linebackers to cover in space is not an ideal scenario. And safety Antoine Bethea is not rising. He's not having a good season. Janoris Jenkins is scared to tackle.
That's amazing. That's a business decision.
It's amazing.
That's a business decision, though, Lord.
Janoris Jenkins was considered one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. And the Giants are paying him a lot of moolah, which is money. And I've never seen a football player scared to tackle in several years like I have. Listen, Deion Sanders the knock on Deion Sanders was he wasn't afraid to get his nose dirty. But I've never seen Deion Sanders attempt to tackle the way Janoris Jenkins does. And who the hell is the Giants linebackers? Listen, this team is a mess, man. This team, F.
I gave that defense a D, and maybe I just saw there's a few bright spots that I did see. Did have a lot of pressure. It did get into the backfield quite a bit. Like I said before earlier, it's just a microcosm of what Leonard Williams does. Just never gets there, but he disrupts and causes pressure. Jabril Peppers had a few pass breakups. I like what I saw from him. You know, he put a couple big hits. There was the pass breakup that I mentioned on Robbie Anderson, even though I think it's more Robbie Anderson stinking it up. But like you said, outside of the Cowboy game, this was the least amount of sacks that just offense has given up all season. And that speaks to how bad the Giants' defense is, whether it's the linebackers or the defensive line, however you want to look at it. The only game, this is it. You know, think about how they've been thrashed all year. Sam, no turnovers. But, you know, like for the first time all season, no turnovers. So I thought that spoke volumes. But once again, like you said, is it a game plan thing or is it a player thing? And either which way, it's going to take more than an offseason to fix. For the Giants, I gave them a D. The Jets averaged 12.3 points a game for the season on offense, and offense scored 27 points.
Yeah, now let's move on to special teams. Two extra points were blown. You know, the first on a bad snap. The second on Aldrick Rojas missed a 43-yard attempt after Golden Tate pass interference penalty on a two-point conversion. This is high school stuff, listeners. Cody Core dropped Baxton Barrows for no gain on Riley Dixon's 53-yard punt. And Dixon in the fourth quarter sent the 49-yard punt out of bounds on the 7-yard line. And listen, he's having a hell of a season, listeners. The Giants punter, Riley Dixon. And Corey Brownson should not have taken the ball out of the end zone from the from 2 yards deep in the fourth quarter. He returned that to the 17-yard line.
16, yeah, something like that.
Come on, man. D+.
Yeah, I thought, I gave you guys an F. And the reason why, I know that you guys ended up getting the 2-point conversion, but anytime you miss an extra point and you're forced to chase two multiple times in the game because of it, anytime you botch a snap, I mean, listen, they literally left 2 points after touchdowns on the board. And you just can't have that, let alone, you know, like I think the punt coverage team did a good job. But I also think that that's more about the fact that the Jets are really just not a very good punt return team. So that's what you will. But, you know, anytime the kicking game is a problem and you're leaving points on the field, it changes the game, man. It changes the way you call the game, and I give them an F for it. It just can't happen. Regardless of how good the punter had a day, it's just a matter of you just can't have it, Lloyd. I agree. You got to think about something. The Giants have 2 wins on the year, and one of those wins came on a missed field goal. So why am I going to give them, you know, credit for missing kicks as well? Like,
I kept on telling a friend of mine's, and he was arguing with me. This team, I give this team 3 wins tops. They might lose to the Dolphins. They're either going to lose to the Dolphins or the Redskins. They're going to lose to one of them.
But I ask you this. As a matter of fact, I ask you this. Do you think Aldrick Rojas is too comfortable?
I think,
because he's not having the season he had 2 years in a row when his standing wasn't.
Sometimes success can give you a big head, so to speak. And I think that's what he's dealing with. And now he's getting a dose of reality. And he could very well be out the door. He better get his act together. He could be out the door. He can very well be out the door after this season. Now let's move on to coaching. All right, and Pat Shurmur, I really hope he finds out that losing to bad teams does not sit well with this Giants ownership. I hope Mara doesn't turn this organization into a joke, because that's the direction that this is heading in. He talked about urgency all week. All week, listeners, he talked about urgency, and this team came out flatter than a deflated Thanksgiving Day balloon. And Sherman did not pay for going for it on 4th and 1 and failing from his 39-yard line. He dodged one near, which I thought was a dumb decision. And James Betcher's defense is a massive reason for the losing. It needs to be addressed in some fashion. This whole entire coaching staff needs to be shown a door at the end of the season. And I just have a feeling. I have a feeling that that's not going to be the case. I have a feeling it's not going to be the case. Like I said, you preach urgency, 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 and your team comes out there and looks like this? Come on,
well,
man.
Here's what I'm going to tell you.
By the way.
I gave him a D simply because I thought Daniel Jones, not that it's hard to have a day against, you know, this ragtag defensive cornerback, secondary, whatever, of the Jets, but I just thought that he was able to fix things enough to salvage. But you're right. I don't know how this team could come out so lifeless. I don't understand how this offense against this Jets secondary. I don't understand how what your game plan was, how bad your game plan was to come out and look like they did, man. It's unacceptable. It's inexcusable. Unacceptable, rather. Inexcusable. And I think that's a reflection of the coach. I will say this. You have to know. You really have to know what you're looking at, because he's going to come out and the media hype train is real. Daniel Jones, I want to tell you, that was his 17th turnover on a young season. The fumble yesterday was his 17th turnover. So you when you're looking at him, and the media hype train in New York is telling you Danny Dimes, this kid is for real, you got to know what you're looking at. Because as a kid that's turned the ball over 7 times in 7 games, 17 times in 7 games, is that a guy that is developing? Is that a guy that
you believe this coach is doing the best job? You know, when we knock Sam Darnold, think about this. Daniel Jones is 2 years older than Sam Darnold. Think about that. He's 2 years older than Sam Darnold.
Listen, I can easily see at some point the Giants moving on from this quarterback, and it's not going to be from this regime, listeners. It's not. It's going to be from a new GM is going to come in here, and he's going to realize that Daniel Jones is not the quarterback for the Giants.
No, well, I don't know if he is or isn't, and I don't want to make it about that.
I know it's early, but like I was saying before, you can see when someone has it and when someone doesn't have it. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think Daniel Jones could be a solid quarterback in the NFL. I do. I do think that he could be a solid quarterback. I don't think that he could be a quarterback that's going to lead a team to a Super Bowl and win. And isn't that what you want your quarterback to be about? Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what you hope comes out of your quarterback? Say what you want to about Sam Darnold, but I can see Sam Darnold being a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I can't see that from Daniel Jones at this point. And who knows, maybe next year, Mad Mike, and listeners, maybe he comes back and is a completely different player after having 1 year in a book. Again, I hope I'm wrong on this. Prove me wrong.
Well, that's the logic behind it. The logic behind it is he looks poised. He looks like he knows what he's doing. He looks like he's the goods. And you know, he has plays where he does look like it. But I think that you can see a New York media at work. I think you can see a media, and this is what the Giants are banking on with Leonard Williams. One where one really loves the Giants and one that really is hard on the Jets. Because, you know, Sam Darnold didn't have 17 turnovers last year in whatever, however many games I think it was, 12 games. He didn't have 17 turnovers. And we're over here praising Daniel Jones, who already has 17 turnovers in 7 games. Do you know what 17 turnovers is in 7 games?
Yeah, that,
8 interceptions it's crazy.
That's ridiculous. Look, can we just get off this football crap and let's take a quick commercial break? When we come back, Mad Mike, it is time to give you some props. Your boy Frank Ntilikina is playing some solid basketball, so we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. We spent the first half of the show talking football, ugly football. That is our New York franchises, the Jets and Giants. But let's talk a little positivity from our basketball team, one of our basketball teams, the New York Knicks. Okay, and Mad Mike's boy, we have listeners. We have to give props to Mad Mike because from day one, Mad Mike has stuck by this young man's side and said that he's a better basketball player than we all perceive him to be, especially me. Especially me, Alfred Payton, Dennis Smith Jr., me, Wally Pitt. Okay, and as much drama and symbolism came from winning Friday night's Kristaps Porzingis Bowl, the event could ultimately be remembered as the night Frank Ntilikina, in my opinion, listeners, inherited the Knicks starting point guard job, for the next several years. Now, for those of you asking who's Wally Pipp, okay, I'm going to let you know who Wally Pipp is, listeners. Wally Pipp is known in folklore as the Yankees' first baseman who took a day off allowing Lou Gehrig to start. And the rest is history. If you don't know who Lou Gehrig is, Lou Gehrig is one of the greatest Yankees to ever put on a uniform, to ever wear pinstripes. Okay? And Ntilikina has put a stranglehold in the starting point less than 2 weeks after the coach refused to give him the starting nod in Orlando, even though he was missing all three of his other point guards at that particular time. Notice I said coaching. Notice I said the coach refused to put him in. He made shaky excuses, I'm talking about Fizdale, about wanting to keep Ntilikina out of foul trouble. Perhaps Fizdale didn't trust him offensively to start the game. Rookie R.J. Barrett instead started a point guard. He's not a point guard. He's out of position. Frank Ntilikina is playing solid basketball, listeners. Solid on a defensive end. And he's playing without thinking. When the ball touches his hand and he's open, he shoots. This is the first time we're seeing this from him. And, Mad Mike, I want to ask you, okay? Obviously, I want you to tell us all you told us so and why you told us so. But I want to ask you, where's this coming from? Is it coaching? Where's this coming from that he's playing this type of basketball when Fizdale didn't even want to give him an opportunity?
Lord, I don't think it comes from coaching. And I'm happy you mentioned it because it's actually something that I was going to bring up. This coach refused to start him. This coach gave away games earlier this year, starting other guys at point guard. We just had the conversation last week about how he overutilizes the special skills of Julius Randle and R.J. Barrett, their ability to handle by putting them at point guard, which makes them weaker. We just had this conversation last week. I think that Frank built an entire summer, built his confidence up. I think he went on a world stage and he showed everybody, not just us. You know, we're thinking about it as Americans watching on American TV. Think about what he showed the rest of the world, what he showed all these other people watching the game, that he belongs. Remember what he did to Kemba Walker in that game. You know, Kemba Walker of the 6-1, 6-2 Boston Celtics. He has confidence. He knows he can play with anybody. The biggest reason I've always stood by Frank is because this front office, when it came to their picks last year, when it comes to their picks this year, and I'm talking about the front office, not the coach. I'm talking about the actual executives, right? They want preach patience and time, allowing Kevin Knox to grow and preaching about Mitchell Robinson's development and this one. They never once ever did they tell you that Frank deserved that same time, that same benefit, that same opportunity. Frank was developing from the bench. Frank wasn't developing on the court like Kevin Knox, who was shooting 30% most nights, but was somehow jacking up 15 shots a game. He wasn't getting the same minutes down the stretch as Mitchell Robinson. Not because Mitchell Robinson was good offensively. Mitchell Robinson was on the court last year because of his defense, right? But Frank is just as good defensively from the perimeter as Mitchell Robinson is on the interior. But they never committed to him, ever. This is the first time that they're forced to commit to him, and now they're going to try to take the credit. They don't deserve it. Frank just needs the time on the court. He just needed people to believe in him. He's proven that. Yeah, do you want to depend on a guy with a fragile psyche? Yeah, maybe not. But at the same time, how many guys have a fragile psyche? How many guys just want to know that their coach believes in them and it's not just coach speak? When he goes in front of a camera and says, I believe in this kid, he can go and make the mistakes. I see the growth. He's getting better. You got to mean it. You can't go and tell that to everybody. And then in the fourth quarter, Frank's on the bench while R.J. Barrett is running point guard when you give up. Orlando goes on an 18-0 run, or the Spurs go on an 18-0 run, or he's benched for the first three quarters of opening night. And, you know, those things actually speak louder than words, don't they? And how many times has this organization told Frank, yo, we don't believe in you? To me, long-winded, Frank does everything that the other guys don't do. He plays unselfish. He shoots it when he has it only. He doesn't force it. He plays defense. Everything that we want the rest of the team to be, he does that. And for some reason, we fault him for doing that.
Listen, I'll go on record to say this, Mad Mike and listeners. In my opinion, this is almost like his rookie year where he's learning things on the basketball court. You understand what I'm saying, Mad Mike?
Like, yeah,
this is the first year where he's actually playing and learning on a basketball court. The other 2 years, the Knicks just kind of, you know, it was whatever.
You know what happened the first 2 years? The first year they had a coach who was coaching for his job, so he was going to rely on the veterans and Jeff Hornacek. And last year he was playing for a coach and for an office that was trying to distance themselves from Phil Jackson.
Yeah, but I'm trying to. Obviously, Elfrid Payton, which obviously you can see how great of a signer that was. Thank God it's only a 1 year deal. He has a history of being injured.
Yeah, but you know what else, Lord? He's a Scott Perry guy. Go look at
Scott Perry drafted him in Orlando.
Correct.
When he's with Orlando.
Correct. He's a Scott Perry guy. And you want to know what bothers me more about Scott? And last year I was big on Scott Perry, and this year I'm not so big on him. And that's one of the reasons why. Because it tells me that he's a guy that believes that he's never wrong. You can draft a guy, you can look at a guy all you want. And for him, he has to be right on his guys. And he's going to give his guys every opportunity, no matter what the results are. Mario Hezonja last year. Wayne Ellington this year. He's the one that brought Wayne Ellington to Sacramento.
Yeah. And now Wayne Ellington is mirrored in a bench. Like, in a player rotation, it makes no sense to me.
No, there is no rotation.
You know what I'm saying? And listen, man, I'm sick of Julius Randle already. I'm sick of him. I was watching the Dallas Mavericks game, okay? And I kid you not, listeners, every time this dude touched the ball, he turned it over. And Mike Breen and Wally Szczerbiak was doing a game. I believe it was Wally Szczerbiak and not Alan Hahn. And they kept on saying, he is playing out of control. A lot of times they was like, what is he doing? And I'm telling you guys, I'm telling y'all, he's playing out of control basketball. I'm not questioning his talent. He has talent. He's a talented young man. He is playing out of control. And this is what I'm going to ask you, Mad Mike, and listeners. If you're a coach and you see somebody playing out of control basketball and not playing systematic basketball within your system, which you want the team to run, why are you not yanking his behind off the court? Why are you still letting him be on the court and turn the ball over? And be like, you know what? Come out the game, sit down, get it together, and get on my page. Do you think Greg Pop, if he did that, would he be on the court if Greg Popovich was coaching?
You know what? I don't think Greg Popovich would coach him this way, though. I think what you see from him is exactly what Fizdale is coaching. Fizdale truly believes in positionless basketball. He's trying to reinvent the wheel. And Julius Randle is playing and showing you why power forwards are not point guards. And I don't think that that's him. I think that, like I said last week, I think that when you have that kind of capability, like an Antoine Walker, I think it does make you a special offensive player, but there's a reason why he's not a point guard.
But here's what I'm saying, and for some reason, this coach is... have Frank Ntilikina, right? You got RJ Barrett, who's supposedly your point guard. Why the hell does he even need to have the ball in his hand? If you got two point guards, quote-unquote, two point guards
but
on the court.
But this is what they're coaching, Lloyd. That's what they're coaching. And the New York Knicks are coaching that. He's not going broke. He's doing it. That he's doing exactly what they're coaching him to do.
But even if that's the case, though, still trying to dribble past three defenders, that's common sense. Nobody who can coach you to do something that idiotic. That's just stupid. It's careless play. That's careless play on a basketball court. I seen him play with this dude dribbled. He went to turn and threw. He threw the ball to the concession stand worker. I was like, what the hell is this dude doing?
Yeah, but what I'm saying, Lloyd, is if you say if you're in practice and you're coaching, you know, you have plays. You have sets where you want him to handle the ball. You don't want him to ever feel like he can get a rebound and push the ball down court. You never want him to get the ball and feel like at the top of the key he's the guy. That's not what you want. You want to be able to you want him to know that his role is still power forward. It's still to go hit that elbow, back your guy down and either hit the layup or you know what I mean, or take your fadeaway. But you that's not what's being coached. At least in my eyes, that's not what I see. And the only reason I'm saying I don't think that's being coached is because you see Marcus Morris do it. You see all these guys going to do it. They're all taking turns. All of them.
Listen, man. Listen, he's definitely, again, if the Knicks, if it wasn't for them having a two-year deal with this, with a buyout after the second year, this would be a horrific contract. He's not a $63 million player. He's not.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to tell you this. I think he would be. I think that the contract would be a really good contract. The New York Knicks had like D'Angelo Russell. If they had, and I'm not going to have to praise him, Frank, all this time. I think Frank has too much of an unselfish mentality where he's just going to do what's needed on the court at that moment. I think if you had like a D'Angelo Russell, I think he'd just knock Randall off the block and take the ball and run the offense. I don't think Frank is there yet. And I think that's what this team is missing. Not calling him a floor general, just somebody that has enough there where he could be like, yo, you know, get the F out of here. This is my ball. This is my offense. I'm running it right now. Because I think that the coach empowers everybody to feel that way as far as they can run the offense. It's a very dangerous, I've always said it, positionless basketball is a dangerous concept. It really is a dangerous concept because positionless basketball is playground basketball. That's what it is.
And it's playground basketball. Lost that game against Dallas. Here's another thing, coaching, listeners, coaching. I'm going to throw this out there. The Knicks were up by 3 points, I believe, Mad Mike. Or they were either up by 6 points. It was one of the two. And when Tim Hardaway Jr. hit that three-point shot at, you know, in the court, why in the hell didn't they foul? Why are you letting somebody shoot? In the whole time, I was saying
that's
to myself.
That's what Breen was saying. And right? Did he like, not say? He's like, I don't even think the Knicks are going to let them get up this shot.
Unbelievable. And even at the end of the game, they was up by three. And instead of fouling, they let Luka Doncic shoot it. And obviously, it was a long shot. But he's a player that's capable of making that shot. And they still
didn't
foul him.
It was a dumb shot, Lloyd. You know, not for nothing. It was a dumb shot.
It really
is.
It was.
And I'm happy he took a dumb shot because the Knicks won.
That's why we won.
You know what I mean? Like,
but I'm still saying you foul in that situation. Foul. I was watching a game. I don't know if it was the Lakers game. I was watching one game, and it was in that same situation, and I kid you not, I think the Lakers were up three, and I forgot who they were playing. But as soon as that damn ball was inbounded, a foul was done immediately. Immediately.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand the defense. But at the same time, I just don't understand. I don't understand his shot, man. I just don't. Like, I understand Steph Curry and these guys have made it cool, you know, to be like the super highlight. But you know, he took that shot with like 17, 13 seconds left. Like, it was such a bad shot, man. Such a bad shot. And if the Knicks weren't so bad from the free throw line, by the way, coaching, because everybody is shooting below their career averages, that game should have been, you know, over. I mean, the Knicks missed 11 free throws, man. 11.
I say this, listeners. The only shot to me that's easier than a free throw, in my opinion, is a layup. And sometimes NBA players miss layups. But you have nobody trying to block your shot at the free throw line.
It's called a free throw.
Exactly.
It's free. Exactly. It's uncontested.
Thank you. And if you're a professional basketball player, and you're not, because nobody from the Knicks is really shooting well from the line, all right? Wouldn't you be in the gym before practice and after practice taking as many free throw attempts as you can? It's ridiculous how bad of a free throw shooter RJ Barrett is. Now, he could correct that. He can. But just think how many points game in and game out the Knicks are leaving off the board because they're not hitting free throws. I think this team is shooting like 60% combined from the free throw line.
Yeah, 60. It's exactly 60.
That
not 61, is not 64. It's exactly 60.
That's disgusting.
And I look at a guy like, and this is why I say it, because, you know, some of these kids, they don't have track records, right? But we look at a guy like RJ Barrett, and you're saying, why is this guy shooting in the 40% when he was 60%? He was already bad coming in at 60% in college. Why is he almost 20 points below his career, you know, his college average? Or Julius Randle, who's a 70% career free throw shooter, why is he under 60%? I just got to ask. I don't know. What is this team doing? Do they not practice? Do they not work on their free throws? Is it because it happened last year too?
But free throw percentage. If you know your team is leaving that many points, you know what I'm saying, you know, off the board because they're not hitting free throws. Why not just have a sole practice where, you know what, y'all ain't going to do nothing but shoot damn free throws an entire practice? Have to. These dudes have the best facilities in the world. In the world. Get better at it, man. Get better at it. But as a coach, you have to make them get better at it. Every single practice, before and after. No excuses. Unless your wife was having a baby or there's a death in the family, you're shooting 30 free throws. 30. And maybe you can't leave until you hit a certain percentage of them. This is, it's sad, man. It's sad. And again, it's not for lack of talent. This team has enough talent to earn a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. And even though they are winning games that they should lose, for the most part, the Knicks have been competitive in just about every game that they've played. And outside of them getting their behinds handed to them against the Sacramento Kings, that's the only game where they've gotten washed.
But that's why everybody will tell us that we're too rough on a coach, because they're playing hard and they're in these games. But like I said before, those are the games that coaches win and players lose. Those close games, because a player is just going to go out there and play at some point. This coach has to, like, his lack of use of timeouts and you know, or when he sees his team reeling, you know, got to be quick on the trigger, calling plays, you know, early on, not using the point guard position. A lot of things went into a lot of these losses. That's why we're so tough on them.
Listen, it remains to be seen. And obviously, listeners, we still have so much more basketball to talk about. The Brooklyn Nets actually playing better basketball. You know, and everybody's saying Kyrie Irving is really great in the locker room, listeners. And he's playing solid basketball. I got to give credit where credit is due. He's playing solid basketball. And when you bring Kevin Durant to that mix, this team is going to be one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference. Easily. Easily. And I was watching a report, not a report, but he was on a Stephen A. Smith show. I don't know if it was First Take, and Stephen A. Smith was asking Kevin Durant, is there any chance that he comes back this year? And he said no. He said there's no chance he comes back this year. But again, with the way Kyrie Irving is playing, and, you know, with Kevin Durant and the rest of the talent that Brooklyn has, they'll be a top three team in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. In my opinion. I kudos to Kyrie Irving. I think he's a nut job off the court, but on the court, very solid basketball player. Very solid.
Yeah, I also think it's pretty evident that he sabotaged the Boston Celtics with the start that they've gotten off to. That's pretty clear.
No, you're right. Some players just don't fit. I didn't think that was a smart deal for Boston to make, but they did it. And, you know, they got the short end of the stick with that. You know, short end of the stick. But with that being said, listeners, it's that time of the show we know and love, where we let Mad Mike do his thing and give his rant. So, Mad Mike, what's your rant for the week, brother?
Lloyd, do you remember about this time in February when the New York...
Uh-oh, we lost him again, listeners. Having technical difficulties. Let's see if we can get Mad Mike back so he can finish.
Can you hear me?
Oh, we got you now. We got you now, Mad Mike. We got you. Yeah, continue,
do you remember this time of year? I'm saying about last February when the New York Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis. What did KP tweet to the world? Stay woke, was it?
Yes.
Stay woke, right?
Yeah.
And what was he telling us? That this New York front office is a problem. Don't fall for the blah, 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 blah. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I don't know if you saw, obviously, all the stories that came out with the Knicks playing Dallas this week. But he wanted us to stay woke. All the stories of his dirty deed while he was in New York came out this past week. And here's what I'm going to tell him. You want us to stay woke, it's time for your ass to go to sleep. when we find out that you blew off a U.S. Open where you were an honored guest because they refused to give you he wanted like a whole block of seats free for his entourage. When they wouldn't give it to him, he blew it off, just didn't show up to the event. Jerk move. That's not a superstar move. That's a jerk move. You want us to stay woke? Go to sleep.
All right, there it is. And listen, what about your boy going hard to the hole and trying to flush it in Porzingis' face? How about that?
Frank, yo, yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. Listen, but you want to know what else, Lloyd? Lloyd, we find out that the Knicks refused to hire his trainer to their training staff, which is another reason he wanted out. And you know what I found out? Dallas hired his personal trainer. So while the team is working out with training staff, he's working out with his own personal trainer in Dallas. Was it worth it? Yeah. Okay. And that's on top of his brother wanting a front office position. So you want us to stay woke when you were doing all these things behind the scenes, let alone the supposed rape situation and everything else? I mean, come on, man. Come on, dude.
And he didn't want to be, he requested a trade on top of everything else.
But this is why he requested a trade, because of these things. Yeah. And he was saying, these are things that you should give your superstar. And something else I found out last week. Did you know that Phil Jackson tried to trade him after his rookie season?
No, that's
because he saw, yeah. I just found it out. He had an offer on the table for a first round draft pick and two now to today, in today's game, two current All-Stars and a first-round draft pick had on the table, and James Dolan shot it down. They said the biggest reason, they wouldn't give the names. They wouldn't give the names, but they said gun deal. They didn't want to release the names because, obviously, then those two players on their current teams would have issues. But, you know, they said that Phil never thought that he was going to be a franchise player. They never thought he'd be able to stay healthy or in shape enough. They said that they already saw that he has trouble with what I'm looking for, shorter, muscular guys. And, Phil was ready to move on.
That's interesting. That is interesting. I never knew that.
No, I just found out last week.
That's a jewel. That's a jewel of information right there. With that being said, Gad, I'm sorry, Gad.
No, I was going to say, my whole thing with him was it ain't, you know, we always going after certain guys. It's easy to go after Jim Dolan, but, you know, just think about what role he played in all this.
Right.
KP, meaning.
Woo, I love sports. I do. I do love it. But with that being said, listeners, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and Mad Mike want to thank you for sticking with us. And Mad Mike, you got a lot of props from last week's show and the week before that. Fans are loving it. They're loving it. They are loving it. So let's keep this going. We want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for doing this thing. He actually has a wrestling podcast show, listeners. So, you know, you should actually check out his wrestling podcast show. It's good stuff. But listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. Happy Veterans Day. It's Veterans Day, correct?
Correct.
Happy Veterans Day. Salute to all the soldiers. Past and present, you know, they've given their lives and sacrificed so much for this country. Want to give you a prop. So God bless to, those individuals and their families. And listeners, have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. So, ayo, let's roll, baby.
Yo, you know something? I was watching the Knicks yesterday play the Cleveland Cavaliers. I turned the game off. They ended up losing by 21 points. I think I cut the game off maybe around halftime, tuned right back in around the third quarter, and I just couldn't do it anymore. The Knicks, I'm at a loss. You guys are breaking it down way better than I can. I can't sit there and watch. I'd rather watch the Nets. I'm a Knicks fan, man, but I don't know, man. They look horrible. They look absolutely horrible. I'm not sure what the solution is. It's definitely going to be a collection of solutions that's going to change and turn this ship around. But yeah, man, the Knicks suck. So yeah, Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show. Appreciate everybody that's tuning in. PMF Sports. This drops every Monday. Everywhere the podcasts are available, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Now, as Lloyd mentioned, I have a wrestling podcast called PMF Wrestling that drops on Thursday. So do me a favor, check everything out. Part of my fresh radio on Sunday on Mixcloud. This show drops on Monday. And of course, wrestling on Thursdays. You can follow Lloyd A. Thompson at Lloyd A. Thompson on Instagram and Twitter, and at PMF Sports on Instagram and on Twitter. Hit LloydAThompson.com with any questions. You can send it directly through the website or chop it up on Twitter, send a DM, whatever it is you do. And they'll chop it up with you and answer one of those questions on a future episode of the show. So once again, it's the Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show. Every Monday, subscribe. You don't want to miss the show when it drops. All right, we'll catch y'all in 7 days. Happy Veterans Day. Peace.